It's a river.
I do think there's a pathway forward, but we will need to think differently for this generation about how we educate as they move and progress.
Welcome to the third part of our three-part first episode. In this session, David Osher will explore with Scott Palmer, the managing partner of Education Council, an education consulting firm that combines experience in policy, strategy, law, and advocacy to assist the U.S. education system in helping all children thrive. Scott is also a former Deputy Assistant Secretary at the U.S. Department of Education's Office of Civil Rights. Additionally, Palmer was one of the key conveners of a consensus-building process that resulted in the creation of the Science of Learning and Development Alliance. In this session, Osher and Palmer will also explore the challenges left by COVID and the unfolding of AI. David?
Scott, Governor Wise talked about what the public wants from schools. Student mental health, literacy, safety, and meaningful preparation for college and careers. He also discussed the relationship between politics, policy, and pedagogy to education and called them the three P's. The science of learning and development, which addresses what the public wants, drives this podcast series. What drove you, Linda Darling Hammond, Bethany Little, and the late Chris Edley, each of whom have been long-term players in the three P's, to commission in 2016 a synthesis of what multiple disciplines told us about how children and youth learn and develop? Can you talk about this, as well as the 2016 convening that reviewed the first draft of the findings and the 2017 release of the final report?
Yeah, thank you, David. That process started almost a decade ago now, where the players you mentioned and some others, Dr. Pam Cantor and others on the periphery, were having a series of conversations about why, on the one hand, we had achieved some important advancements in our education systems and in outcomes, and yet when you step back and looked at the bigger picture about the extent to which we had moved fundamentally from the industrial systems or created anything like the systems that equity and human potential would tell you are necessary, we had achieved very little. And we wondered why and what we could do differently. This is my historical recollection. And the feeling was that perhaps the science of learning and development, crystallizing findings from multiple disciplines, held important insights about not only where we were on this journey, but what we could do to achieve much more. And our thought was that we really needed to understand and test this hypothesis. And we needed to be good stewards to lead with the research and then think about how that research drove and was reflected in great practice or pedagogy, and only then think about what the policy implications were and are. Too often we try to do that backwards. And so we were thrilled to be part of an effort to commission these papers. And I think what we found is, if anything, we lowballed it, that the science of learning and development and the lessons it provides were even more than we thought, both strong inditers of the current systems and created incredible guidance and direction for the kind of transformative systems we need. I think Governor Wise, of course, who is much better with phrase and alliteration than I am in his three P's, has rightly brought in politics to this. And I think we have seen, coming out of the pandemic, which we'll talk about more, and particularly in our current political environment, a lot more of that politicization. But for the science of learning and development and the SOLD Alliance, it really started from this notion about how could the research drive the practice and policy?
So let's extend what you just said, Scott. And can you describe how the findings ended up being utilized both before COVID, because they first were pulled together in early 2017 in final form, during COVID, and just after COVID, and then we'll come back later to ask it, talk about our current situation.
Sure. One funny story that I remember is when we did the first convening in what would become the Sold Initiative and then the Sold Alliance, we thought humbly, this includes the folks you named, that we didn't want to push this down anyone's throat, that we had come to see this as a really profound set of information and thought it should be elevated so that policymakers and practitioners really had a better sense of the science of learning and development and understood it as the driver it could and should be, not necessarily telling them everything to do with it, but rather giving them that window into that crystallized information. And we thought we would spend the first convening of a array of really incredible education leaders talking about why we had this belief and testing what they thought we should do and whether we thought we should do something with it. And they all walked in and said, "Hey, we read the pre-read. We're all on board. We should do something profound with this. This is really helpful. What's next?" And we thought to ourselves, well, here's a good problem to have. I don't have anything else on the agenda for the next 2 days. This is what we thought we were going to spend the 2 days getting to. And indeed, everyone walked in the room already on board that we needed an initiative. We needed to elevate the science. It had profound implications. David, you're right. This is probably around 2017, 2018. And this led to the launch of the Sold Alliance. Not that we need to focus on that, but interestingly, right before the pandemic. And I say that because it's clear that the findings in the science and what they tell us about incredible human potential inherent in each and every child, about the malleability of each and every child through and beyond adolescence. And by the way, for us lay people who didn't know that when scientists and researchers talk about adolescence, they mean till your mid-20s, right? Like just that basic. What it tells us about the critical role of relationships and context on the one hand, and the critical role of personalization on the other, and how unifying those different drivers could be. It is just such a critical body of work. And then the pandemic comes. And I think what the pandemic did on the one hand was elevate a lot of things that the science talked about as being critical, both because of their absence during the pandemic, and because of the possibility of bringing back not just the status quo we had prior to the pandemic, but better systems coming out. I don't know that we achieved as much in that regard as we could have. And then, of course, we found ourselves perhaps with some other challenges, which is the ways that the pandemic further created political divides, created pushback on science, certainly research and evidence itself. And so now we find ourselves, I think, in a very complicated wake.
Scott, let's talk a little more about the pandemic and what were the specific lessons that were taken up from the science of learning development that were made much more visible by the pandemic.
Yeah, thanks. The one that most comes to mind, obviously, is the impact of school closures and the stresses and strains of the pandemic and the difficulties of building that kind of relationship and connectivity. And I think there were reasons to see, even as parents, the vital role of school very differently, related to what the science tells us about relationships and meaning. I myself had a child who was just finishing elementary school at the beginning of the pandemic, was absolutely thriving. And once he was remote and the school struggled with that transition, and then he transitioned to middle school remote, lost any sense of connection to the adults, to the system, to the expectations. And the change and the impact were incredible. And it has taken quite a while to build back from that impact. This is not meant, by the way, as an indictment of folks who did or did not close schools for how long. I think that just whole debate seems ludicrous to me as everyone was trying to figure out the risks of this illness for our society and children and adults and trying to balance two different traumas and harms. Obviously, though, in retrospect, we've learned something important about what we might do if, God forbid, we find ourselves in a similar circumstance. But again, reinforcing the importance of attending to mental health and relationships and meaning as a precursor to maximizing human potential. I think that's in some ways maybe the good lesson or the important lesson that we learn most. At the same time, we see incredible challenges continuing from the pandemic, the chronic absenteeism, the academic recovery, and I think the social emotional recovery. I think this will be a generation that progresses and develops in very different ways. But I will say also, we can take some solace in what the science tells us about malleability of these children and youth. I do think there's a pathway forward, but we will need to think differently for this generation about how we educate as they move and progress.
I like that positive note, Scott, and let me move into the current situation that people come to with a lot of negativity. And I'm interested to hear from you how the science can be used within a context where both the wake of COVID continues in terms of how it has affected people's learning and mental well-being. And at the same time, we are in a situation that challenges the three P's.
Yes, and maybe even weaponizes them. I'll start with the fact that Education Council, where I am, the SOLD Alliance that I'm very proud of, are bipartisan and nonpartisan entities. And indeed, the science has critical lessons that you would think would be incredibly appealing to all sides of the aisle. Stereotypically, you want to focus on relationships and the importance of building environments rich with belonging. And on the other hand, you want to talk about personalization and the importance of meeting the needs and interests and talents of each and every child. And there's something for everyone. But we aren't and shouldn't be value neutral. So the vital role of education to individuals and society, the vital federal role in education, the critical role education plays in promoting equitable opportunity and social mobility. The reality of our diversity and therefore the need to find those educational benefits as opposed to division, these are all just critical. And I think science holds a lot of lessons on how to do those things and really help each and every child thrive. I think on a positive note, notwithstanding that I think the federal agenda is now far different from anything we've seen before and very different from a focus on the science of learning and development. But I do think on a hopeful side, we know more than we ever have about what we need to do to build systems that can maximize each and every child's potential, and particularly in a way that is providing greatest opportunity to those who have gotten the least and need the most. And there's some forcing events that suggest that there's maybe a fertile time for renewed, at least state leadership in that regard. Remember the rise of standards-based reform for all of its positive impact and its unintended negative consequences really emerged from the states. It then grew up there to a nationwide and ultimately a sort of national agenda. Now you're seeing a lot of things emerge, including the move recently by this administration to encourage greater waivers under federal law, the emergence of this recent tax credit, which may end up being the most significant lever in a generation for change, given some last minute shifts in the potential size of this federal investment, which could either be a really destructive force for public education and a move toward religious nationalism, or could be a force for every child has a personal relationship and high quality tutor. Every child has rich summer learning and after school opportunities. Every child has wraparound services. It depends on how it plays out. But these things do call a question for folks to wrestle with about what is our future national education agenda? What is it that we're trying to achieve? And again, the science of learning and development creates an incredible roadmap about the great and high expectations and goals we can have for each and every child and how we need to get there. The last thing I'll say is, as you look out over the next decade, the number of existential drivers of change is just massive. We've talked about a number of them, but can't not think about AI and other technological changes when you consider the decade ahead. And so I think, David, as we think about the science of learning and development and what it can do, not only can it help transform our education system such that each and every child can thrive, but they can thrive in this age of AI, in the age that is coming. And so we have to lead the passer in that regard.
The conversation then shifted somewhat to more deeply discuss the current state of the relationship of learning and artificial intelligence, AI. Part of this was a philosophical question that seems to be on the minds of educators and researchers around the world, and looking at what's the similarities and differences between AI processing and human intelligence, with the question of what is the distinct role of being a human, as well as how does the specific tools that the sciences of learning and development provide us to look at these issues?
What large language models are doing right now is, among other things, they're programmed to be warm and fuzzy.
We thought that at least you'd need humans at the center because of the relational
And
connection.
we do, but it's even more important.
I don't know, my chatbot really loves me, I'm telling you.
Always, and it's always saying, I'm stupid, not you. It's everything. It is just that. And I really think it raises the bar for education in terms of the experiences, because people are experiencing other things that are helping them get things done, which is part of what people want from teachers, and at the same time, not telling them that they're stupid.
Yeah, I heard, I don't know if it was real evidence or anecdotal, David, that more and more students are more comfortable talking to AI than they are going to their TAs and asking questions, because when they go to the TAs, they run the risk of judgment, embarrassment, complication, whereas they talk to this tool and it's very low stakes and the tool answers every question you ask. They say, "What a great and thoughtful question. You're clearly making progress in
That's
this.
right.
Let's talk about that. It's just incredible." But I'll tell you, David, one thing that I worry about in terms of the science of learning and development is we really leaned in, forgive me, this is my layperson's take. We really leaned on the development side of the science of learning and development. And a lot of the findings we have are, I don't know, maybe I'm oversimplifying, but I think what we didn't do is as much on the perhaps learning side. The reason I think that is so important is what is the specialty of humans in a world where we are now not the only form of intelligence on the planet? AI is a totally different intelligence, but it is a form of intelligence. I'm sure you've thought a ton about this, but this is why I'm saying to you, even a blog post, right? Something that begins to demystify what do we know about the likely differences between human and artificial intelligence in this new world?
No, that's a very, Scott, that's a very, very interesting question. And I'm going to really think about it. I haven't thought about it in exactly that way. One of them is the Science of Learning Center at the University of Queensland that I've worked about with before.
Yeah.
And what they're, and they've used our work, and I know that, but what they, that's the science of learning, is what we talk about as the science of learning and development. It's interesting to me to be having conversations with people in Australia where they're thinking the same way and they're thinking about development, but their language is the science of learning.
Our session touched on a wide range of topics. It did end up on a philosophical level, but also a practical one. There are people all over the world looking to understand the impact of artificial intelligence and how it's impacting schools, impacting learning, and will be in the near future. But we also heard about the development of the sciences of learning and development and how the pandemic impacted the unfolding of those ideas, especially understanding the relationship of environments to learning.
There's a desire.